You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Next up, our last story of the show. I was joined by Dr. Nick Rawlins from the Paleogenetics Lab at the University of Otago to talk all things paleontology. Now, a new report has called for a partnership with Tangata Whenua, and it will be at the heart of our national parks. Conservationists believe this could weaken the protection of the environment, while iwi say it could end 135 years of alienation from the land. Now, I spoke to Dr. Nick Rawlins about how paleoecology and ancient DNA could be beneficial towards this effort. We also talked about CT scans of toothed bird fossils, which could lead, has led to jaw-dropping discoveries about the history of modern birds. Here's that interview now.
Yeah, so there's been quite a bigger rethink in conservation in New Zealand, and the ramifications are still being felt, and what the Department of Conservation and Conservation Partners do is still being worked through. But the idea is that Tangata Whenua, iwi, Runanga Hapu have been alienated from the land for 135 years with the creation of national parks, with, say, the Wildlife Act going in place, permits to work on Tauonga species, that they haven't been able to do mahinga kai or traditional harvesting. And so part of the rethink is that there should be traditional harvesting allowed in national parks, and that conservation, rather than protecting species, should move to getting them to levels of population size that you can allow mahinga kai, customary sustainable harvest. One of the issues we've got is New Zealanders can return the right to sustainably harvest species, but the question is whether they should be sustainably harvested. Now, with New Zealand, with the arrival of waves of humans and predators, the ecosystem we have in New Zealand now is fundamentally different to the ecosystem that was around at the time of human arrival. So paleontology and archaeology and ancient DNA, this field of paleoecology, can really help in reconstructing how the ecosystem functioned, how genetically healthy was a species at the time of human arrival, what were its population numbers, how did it breed, was it fast breeding, was it slow breeding, and use all that information to actually work out, could you sustainably harvest a species going into the future? If you got populations to a pre-human number, could you sustainably harvest them, or can that species only exist in a vacuum without any harvesting whatsoever? And it can really help inform when the right to sustainably harvest species is returned, can you actually sustainably harvest them or not?
I guess this reinforces a point which we've talked about a lot over the course of this year, and that's the past is really key to the present, and it shows the importance of paleogenetics, that practice.
Yeah, it does. And there was a North and South article that was published recently talking about this report and the changing thoughts around national parks and conservation, that some Tangata Whenua do not want to look to the past, that we need to look to the future. But there's a Maori proverb, kia whakatamari te haere whakamua, which basically means I walk into the future with my eyes fixed on the past. And that encompasses what we do, what my lab does, is we use the past to inform the present and the future. And the example, a really good example of a work we did in our lab a few years ago, is we reconstructed the population size at the time of human arrival in New Zealand of sea lions in New Zealand, the prehistoric New Zealand sea lion, Hooker's sea lion, the one in the subantarctic, and the sea lion out on the Chatham Islands. And we asked, how much harvesting would you need to do to cause the species to go extinct? We knew when humans turned up in New Zealand, we knew when the sea lions went extinct, and we had an idea of the number of humans that arrived in New Zealand and the number of humans when the sea lions went extinct. So we could calculate human growth trajectories, like human population size growth trajectories, and we had an idea of the sea lion population size, how many males, how many females, births, death, immigration. And the results were really startling. Half a sea lion to one sea lion per person per year, and your entire species has gone extinct. And that's what you would call low and sustainable levels of harvesting. And when you actually look at the archaeological record of what was actually harvested, you had the entire, what we call the ontogenetic size range, so the entire size range from pups to juveniles to teenagers to females to males. And if you harvest a female, you're also taking the unborn pup and the dependent pup. So if it came up now that some iwi wanted to conduct mahingukai or traditional harvest of sea lions in a sustainable manner, we would be saying that because the species is so slow breeding and based on the data, we would not be able to harvest that species. But for other species, you may be able to. There's a big push to be able to harvest kereru. Now, kereru in some parts of the country in high enough numbers that you could probably sustainably harvest those species with no detriment to the population or the species.
CT scans of a toothed bird fossil has led to a jaw-dropping discovery. Without sounding too clickbaity there, what was this jaw-dropping discovery?
There's been this big debate in paleontology of what defines a bird versus what defines a theropod bipedal, walks on two legs, meat-eating dinosaur that birds evolved from. And there have been all of these characteristics of birds that we thought were unique to birds, like small size relative to dinosaurs, small genome size, so the entire genetic blueprint of an individual is small compared to dinosaurs. And another one of them was the palate, or how the roof of the mouth operates. So in all modern birds, which we call neonates, they have independently moving top and lower jaws. And but in all ancient birds called paleonates, that includes the rattus, like the kiwi, the moa, the emu, elephant root, ostrich, but a whole lot of birds that were at the time of the dinosaurs. They have had what we call an old palate. They could move their lower jaw, but not their upper jaw. Like their upper jaw was fused to the rest of the skull like it is in humans. And what's happened over the years is these characteristics of birds have been shown to be in dinosaurs. So like the small genome size has been shown in dinosaur fossils, and we could do a whole other talk on that one. The small size has been shown that dinosaurs along the lineage to birds were getting smaller and smaller and smaller even before birds arrived. And so there was this one key characteristic of birds that was still left. Like dinosaurs had feathers and some dinosaurs would fly, so a lot of these went out the window. What this fossil has found is this is an ancient bird found about 20 years ago in Belgium, just before the extinction of the dinosaurs 66 million years ago, and it has a new palate, or the new roof to the mouth. It could move its upper and lower jaws independently. And this was living at the same time as a modern bird that could move its jaws, upper and lower jaws independently. And so what this actually shows is this key characteristic of new versus old birds, again, is completely out the window. And rather than saying you've got birds and dinosaurs, you've actually got more of this grade going through from birds right through to dinosaurs. But the other interesting thing in this is that what it suggests is that your ancient birds had the new palate, could move both their jaws independently, and your modern birds could do it, but your ratites, this moa, kiwi, ostriches, they independently went and evolved the old palate, that they could only move their lower jaw and not their top jaw. So you've now got this evolutionary switching between the way the jaws operate across the bird tree, but you've just got this another pillar of what defines a bird has actually fallen down, and we can think of birds really as living dinosaurs.
How does this change the way that paleontologists study birds, and has it not revolutionized but just evolved that study even more?
A lot of our ideas of bird evolution have been based on modern observations that we have done of birds, of how do they differ to the dinosaur skeletons that you find in fossil deposits. And with the field of paleontology, and with increasingly new fossil sites being discovered, like the really exquisite ones in China that are showing fossilised feathers that you can reconstruct the colour of feathers and everything, and this new discovery like that was made in Belgium, is we've been able to use the fossil record to basically test all our assumptions and hypotheses of what defines a bird versus what defines a dinosaur. And in this case, it's actually shown that one of the key tenets that defines new birds versus old ancient birds and birds versus dinosaurs has fallen down again. So with more and more fossils that we actually discover, we can actually test all our assumptions and biases and hypotheses in the fossil record and improve our understanding of evolution. Wanda chicken is it's the oldest modern bird in the fossil record that was living at the time of the dinosaurs about 66 million years ago and roughly about the same time as this new fossil from Belgium, which was considerably bigger.
To be honest, it was my nickname in high school. With the Wonder Chicken, with it being the oldest known bird, is that sort of the benchmark for a lot of the modern birds we see today?
Yes, you can kind of think of it as like the ancestral modern bird. It would have shared a whole lot of characteristics with modern birds that we see today, and it's suggesting that modern birds, or the neonates, the ones with the new palate, independently moving jaws, evolved at least 66 million years ago. So it's pushed back the evolution of birds, because there's been quite a bit of debate about when did modern birds arise when you're using genetics to reconstruct whakapapa. Was it before the extinction of the dinosaurs, or was it after the extinction of the dinosaurs? So Wanda chicken is really good, and actually provides us with this hard paleontological evidence that there was a modern bird at the time of the dinosaurs. But as to how you define modern birds and ancient birds / dinosaurs, is that's become a lot more grey. It's not so clear-cut. You can think of it as a grade. And one of the interesting things, if you ever look at a velociraptor skeleton and you say put it in what you would call a typical bird pose, is it's very hard to distinguish that from a bird, except some of the obvious differences, like it's got teeth.
That was Dr. Nick Rawlins speaking about how paleoecology and ancient DNA could be beneficial towards sustainability, as well as how a CT scan of a tooth bird fossil led to a change in the way we perceive the evolution of modern birds.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.